On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Brian Chee back on the show today with me. Now, in the age of AI actually revolutionizing the industry, we deep dive in how it's making problems in the world of publishing. That's right. Are fake AI authored books showing up on Amazon and Goodreads? Well, we'll talk about that. Plus, a business grapples with soaring SaaS offerings and costs. We'll bring in an expert from Zylo, Ben Pippinger. He's CSO of Zylo, and he can help shed some light on how organizations can actually optimize their spending in the challenging times, plus ensure security and compliance along the way. Definitely shouldn't miss it. Quiet on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 556, recorded August 11th, 2023. Smart SaaS. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Thinkst Canary. Thousands of irritating false alarms help no one. Hit the single alert that matters. 10% off and 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to canary.tools/twit. Enter the code TWIT and have it here in your box. And by Discourse, the online home for your community. Discourse makes it easy to have meaningful conversations and collaborate anytime, anywhere. Visit discourse.org/twit to get 1 month free on all self-serve plans. Welcome to Twit, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Moreski, your guide through the big world of the enterprise. I guide you by myself. I need to bring in a professional and the expert in their field. I'm going to bring back our amazing Mr. Brian Chee. Brian, it's great to see you, my friend. How are you feeling?
I'm still low energy. Sadly, COVID really kicked my behind. I still have a cough. I'm still going slowly, but I am definitely feeling better. So I'm happy about that.
Well, that's great, because I think today we have a pretty busy show. And with Kurt gallivanting around Sin City, we've got a lot to talk about here. So I definitely think we should get started if we can. So in the age where AI is revolutionizing the entire industry, we deep dive into how things are making waves in the publishing industry. Plus, there's fake AI authored books flooding your favorite online marketplaces. Have you seen them? Well, Amazon and Goodreads are definitely having them. So we'll definitely get into what's going on there. Plus, businesses grapple with soaring SaaS costs. We're bringing in an expert from Zylo, Ben Pippinger. He's chief strategy officer of Zylo, and then help shed some light on how organizations can optimize their software spending in these challenging times, plus ensure security and compliance along the way. So lots to talk about. So definitely stick around till later. And of course, always remember, subscribe to the Twit podcast at twit.tv/twit. And of course, we also have Club Twit, twit.tv/clubtwit. It's only $7 a month. You get access to all of our podcasts ad-free. So definitely check that out, twit.tv/clubtwit. Thank you for support. Let's go ahead and jump in this week's news blips. In today's cyber news from Ars Technica, a group of amateur hackers, mostly teens, known as Lapsus, have caused a significant stir in the cyber world. Despite their limited technical expertise, they've successfully breached major targets, including Microsoft, NVIDIA, and Okta. Their simple yet creative strategies, like bypassing MFA by calling employees repeatedly in the middle of the night, have raised eyebrows in the security industry. Rather than high-tech approaches, Lapsus focuses on persistence and social engineering. Now, the Homeland Security Department's Cyber Safety Review Board, in a new report, detailed Lapsus's tactics and urged organizations to create defenses. Notable among them are their exploits, including hacking MFA provider Twilio, demanding NVIDIA making their GPA drivers open source, and infiltrating Brazil's Ministry of Health, deleting over 50 terabytes of data. The report's takeaway: the need for passwordless authentication systems and tighter regulations to combat techniques like SIM swapping. In the bigger picture, the overreaching theme is clear: security by design is crucial for today's cyber environment.
So I've got another Ars Technica article. And this one's the dark side of AI. The headline on this is "Innocent Pregnant Woman Jailed Amid Faulty Facial Recognition Trend." Use of facial recognition software led Detroit police to falsely arrest 32-year-old Portia Woodruff for robbery and carjacking, reported by the New York Times. 8 months pregnant, she is detained for 11 hours, questioned, and had her iPhone seized for evidence before being released. It's the latest in a string of false arrests due to the use of facial recognition technology, which many critics say is not reliable. The mistake seems particularly notable because the surveillance footage used to falsely identify Woodruff did not show a pregnant woman, and Woodruff was very visibly pregnant at the time of her arrest. The incident began with an automated facial recognition search by the Detroit Police Department. A man who was robbed reported the crime, and police used DataWorks Plus to run a surveillance video footage against the database of criminal mugshots. Woodruff's 2015 mugshot from a previous unrelated arrest was identified as a match. After that, the victim wrongly confirmed identification from photo lineup, leading to her arrest. So, it goes on. It's not exactly a glowing recommendation for AI. Well, anyway, according to the New York Times, this incident is the sixth recent reported case where an individual is falsely accused as a result of facial recognition technology used by the police, and the third to take place in Detroit. All six individuals falsely accused have been black. The Detroit Police Department runs an average of 125 facial recognition searches per year, almost exclusively on black men, according to the data reviewed by the New York Times. The city of Detroit currently faces three lawsuits related to wrongful arrest based on the use of facial recognition technology. Advocacy groups, including the American Civil Liberties Union of Michigan, are calling for more evidence collection in cases involving automated face searches, as well as an end to practices that have led to false arrests. There is a great quote in here. Facial recognition alone cannot serve as probable cause for arrest, as a computer's identification is prone to errors that humans might also make, according to the complaint. Despite its potential, law enforcement's reliance on facial recognition has led to wrongful arrests, causing humiliation, embarrassment, and physical injury, as evident in this particular incident. Hey, like any emerging technology, AI has its share of stumbling blocks, and I would like to see the world not rush into things. False positives have long been a problem when AI was also used to detect fevers at the beginning of the pandemic.
In other cybersecurity news from Dark Reading, the Rust-based injector Freezers is now being weaponized in a sophisticated phishing campaign. And the attack deploys malware via a malicious PDF that cleverly sidesteps endpoint detection and response, or EDR, systems. Uncovered by Fortinet's FortiGuard Labs, this campaign is particularly targeting Europe and North America's specialty chemical and industrial sectors. Eventually, it launches the XWORM malware, which communicates with its command and control server, and this can result in anything from a ransomware attack to persistent backdoor. Also involved as SYK cryptor, a known tool for spreading malware via Discord. The attack starts with a booby-trapped PDF file exploiting the Search MS protocol in Windows to unleash its payload. A deceptive LNK file, distinguished as a PDF icon, tricks users into thinking it's legitimate. Carl Lin from FortiGuard Labs highlights that the multi-layered strategy makes strategic analysis challenging. On the defense front, phishing continues to be a major concern, obviously. Now, a whopping 97% of companies experience an email phishing attack in the past year. That is a lot. To guard against these smarter, targeted threats, experts suggest regular software updates, consistent employee training, and advanced security tools. Interestingly, phishing simulation training seems most effective in critical infrastructure sectors.
So this story, I gotta go and give credit. Lance Cadena provided me the 360 drone view of Lahaina. This is the before shot. Beautiful. It's a great place for vacation. Javier Cantalups provides the after footage. This is really sad. Lahaina has, shall we say, been devastated. And we're hoping that maybe you folks can help. So this is an image of Front Street shared from social media. I'd like people to also beware, avoid the GoFundMe scams that popped up already, and instead consider donating to places like the Red Cross. At the end of this story, there's going to be a QR code that you can snap and get access to a local Maui paper that is listing legitimate charities that are boots on the ground and helping things out. Please keep in mind that the fires have also destroyed cell towers and other telecommunications facility in the area, and tying up circuits just because you might know somewhere in the area isn't going to help. Since Lahaina is a fairly small community, the major mobile carriers don't have mobile towers positioned there yet, and will have to ship them in from the state capital of Honolulu. Kudos to Southwest and United Airlines for going the extra mile. Southwest is providing extremely inexpensive inter-island fares for evacuees, and United is flying empty planes to Maui's Kahului Airport so that tourists stuck in the area can return home. So I'd like to encourage you, if you are so encouraged, I'm going to display a QR code. You can snap that, and that'll take you to a website for the Maui Now newspaper with legitimate charities that are helping out. And I will also give a quick kudos to Oprah Winfrey, who is a Maui resident and is helping also in the recovery efforts. God bless Maui. God bless Lahaina.
Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, we have the bites. But before we get to the bites, we have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech. And that's Thanks Canary. Most companies discover they've been breached way too late. Now, take these scenarios. How would your company actually fare here? Last month, an attacker compromised one of your users and has been reading the company chat. Since then, they've been searching for keywords and embarrassing data. Would you know? Your developer lead was targeted and compromised at a local Starbucks. Would you notice that? Well, you could with Canary tokens. Drop the fake AWS API keys on every enterprise laptop. Attackers compromising your users must use them. When they do, they reveal themselves. Simply put, Canary tokens are tiny little tripwires you can drop into hundreds of places. They follow the Thinks Canary philosophy, trivial to deploy with ridiculously high signal quality. Now, just 3 minutes of setup. No ongoing overhead there. Nearly zero false positives. And you can detect attackers long before they dig in and cause problems. So each customer gets their own hosted management console, which allows you to actually configure settings, manage your Thinks Canaries, and handle all the events. Plus, there's a little room for doubt. If someone browsed a file share and opened a sensitive looking document on your Canary, you'll know immediately and actually be alerted to the problem. Now, it's rare to actually find a security product that people can actually tolerate, and it's nearly impossible to find one that customers actually love. In fact, I've used them. They are amazing. Hardware VM and cloud-based Canaries are deployed and loved on all 7 continents. Go to canary.tools/love and find a selection of unsolicited tweets and emails full of customer love for Thinks Canary. Visit canary.tools/twit, and for just $7,500 per year, you'll get 5 Canaries, your own hosted console, upgrade support and maintenance, and if you use code TWIT in the How to Hear About Us box, you'll get 10% off the price for life. Thinks Canary adds incomparable value, but if you're unhappy, you can always return your Canaries with their 2-month money-back guarantee for a full refund. However, during all the years Twit has partnered with Thinks Canary, their refund guarantee has never been claimed. Visit canary.tools/twit and enter the code TWIT in the How to Hear About Us box. And we thank Thinks Canary for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the bites. Now, this week we heard about even more news about how AI is penetrating and actually watering down different sectors of the market. Now, this week's disturbing news is from Publishing World. According to Ars Technica article, author Jane Friedman made a startling discovery on Amazon and Goodreads. Fraudulent books, possibly filled with junk or even AI-generated content, listed under her name. Despite sounding the alarm, both online giants dragged their feet on removing these faux titles until Friedman's plight gained traction on social media. Now, in her candid blog post called Why Goodreads and Amazon Are Becoming Dumpster Fires, Friedman sheds light on these counterfeit listings, and it's not just isolated incident. In fact, recent reports suggest AI and tech tools like ChatGPT are being used to churn out ebooks at an alarming rate, some even climbing the Kindle bestseller lists. Here's where it gets tricky. Jane Friedman, a respected name whose reports on the publishing sector is understandably worried here, right? Imagine if the hit to her reputation with these AI-generated fakes floating around could cause even more problems. You know, she talks about it a little bit more. You think I'd have control over the books on Goodreads profile, but it's far from the truth. The removal process, well, it's actually a complicated maze of back and forth. While Goodreads did eventually act, Amazon initially requested trademark registration numbers from Friedman before acting on her claim. But hold on. This isn't just about one author. In fact, Jane Ward found 29 titles incorrectly listing her as the author on Goodreads. Sarah Rose faced a similar conundrum with her newest book, which surprised she actually didn't write. Feedbook is actually pouring in, indicating that the author impersonation is becoming all too common on all of these platforms. So this brings up the bigger picture. As generative AI threatens to overwhelm us with unlimited content quality, platforms like Amazon and Goodreads seem to not be prepared. Historian Dean Grodzins, he actually shares his own bizarre experience where he purchased a so-called paperback edition of a popular book, only to find out actually filled with unrelated content on the economic policy. Now, Jane Friedman's rallying cry is clear. Amazon and Goodreads need to step up. They need to verify authorship and they need to squash fraudulent listings right away. Now, that's a wrap on that. But I definitely want to get Brian in here because he's been talking about this for a while. Brian, obviously, with the rise of AI here, these infiltration of platforms like Amazon and Goodreads, you know, the industry is not ready. What are they supposed to do here? Like, what kind of protocol should they be implementing?
Well, there certainly needs to be better documentation on how authors are supposed to set up their books. Ebooks are definitely the big problem here. So here's one of the other tricks, shall we say, that people have been playing. They list a book that might say has 700 pages or 1,000 pages, doesn't matter, a significant work. But what they do is they put the end of book tag in the early chapters and listed under things like Kindle Unlimited. So once you hit the end of book tag, it indicates to the Kindle Unlimited system that you finished the book and thus you get the full amount of money for that read. Because you don't get paid anything unless people complete your titles. Now, the other thing that's a problem is something that Curtis and myself have been really worried about is textbooks. Textbooks tend to be quite a bit more expensive. Our cloud computing books and cloud security books are upwards of just under $70 each. That was priced by CRC Press, not by Kurt and myself. And because our books were translated into multiple languages, we don't know Chinese or Portuguese well enough to be able to tell whether there are illegal or false fake versions coming out on ebook platforms. So that's going to be another big thing. So one of the things that I'm kind of thinking that would be interesting is we've talked about non-fungible tokens in the past, specifically for art. Mm-hmm. But maybe this is time to also start thinking about NFTs for ebooks so that readers can more accurately know that they're buying work by that author, not by an AI or not by someone that's faking it. Sadly, there are some nation states that are using fake titles or fake software to bring in hard currency into their coffers that are then funding who knows what. It is worrisome. I dearly hope Amazon specifically gets their act together and Goodreads. Interestingly enough, the folks at Barnes & Noble actually have something similar to NFT. They actually have all their titles digitally signed in a much, much different way than the Kindle system does. So on the Amazon Nook platform, if I buy an ebook, I know I'm getting an ebook from that author because Barnes & Noble is much more oriented towards the authors. Their system seems, I'm not 100% sure, but it seems to be more interested in making sure the work of art is legitimate. whereas Kindle seems to be more interested in forking over those dollars.
Right.
And of course, I got to say, that's my opinion only.
Right. Right. I mean, I think I get the concept of verifying the identity of the author to ensure that the books submitted are actually by them. But I think that there's actually an even bigger problem, which is just, you know, there's no reason why people can actually go and clone some other book or concept or character and go write their own version of it using these generated technologies. Do you think that publishers are going to be are ready for that? I mean, it seems like there's a flood of the market of just that as well. And some of these books are even very popular.
You know, I don't know. I'm just getting into doing a fiction book that I plan on doing through Amazon, only because with traditional publishing, at best, I'm going to get maybe 12% of the sale on Amazon. That's Amazon's share. My share is closer to 80-something percent. And I don't have to go through the extreme pain of dealing with traditional publishing. So there's a lot of incentive for authors to use things like Amazon and Goodread. However, it really worries me that Amazon, especially, and Goodreads have not taken that one extra half step to validate that the author's work is really the author's work. I mean, their system, when you go and create an author account for the Kindle publishing system, it makes you jump through an amazing number of hoops.
Right.
But the one thing it really doesn't do is make you prove who you really are. So I think that's going to be a missing step that our friends at Goodreads and Amazon are going to need to take, especially as AI starts getting more and more abuse.
Right. Right. How I'm actually curious about this, because this could this be a methodology that that the platforms can do where they could just basically start to work with the actual authors themselves and say, okay, like, this is what we need you to do in order to make sure that things are safer, more authentic online. Like, these are obviously, there's probably lessons we can learn from other industries that we can utilize for this type of thing, right? There has to be something, some other way that the publishers, like Amazon, even being a, you know, self-publishing platform, can work with its users to try to say, okay, like, this is what we want you to do going forward when you submit a book or submit a thing, whether it is an identity thing or not. So educate them on better methodologies to basically ensure identity and things are safer. But do you think there's other industries that we can learn from here that we can maybe find better ways and to actually combat this type of thing?
Well, I personally think we have a reasonably good solution that we're not using. The copyright.
Yep.
When you go and create an ISBN number with the Library of Congress before Amazon or anyone lets you put up an ebook, an ISBN number is generated. Now, the ISBN number is assigned to an identity. Now, the ISBN numbers for our two textbooks that Kurt and I both wrote together were assigned. One was to my name and one was to Curtis's name. But we were never given any kind of digital certificate or any kind of specific number uniquely identifying us. The only unique identity was actually with the publisher, because they wanted to go and file our 1099s. So we actually had to fork over our social security numbers so they could assign a tax ID. So since almost no one writes a book just for the heck of it, maybe, just maybe, we either use the unique author number assigned by the Library of Congress, or we use a tax ID number, which we're used to anyway. And Amazon actually has, whenever you're a seller, you have to assign a tax ID number.
Right.
So maybe it's not so much missing steps as skipping steps.
Right. It's true. Now, I, obviously, Amazon basically propelling the self-publishing market forward. And, you know, obviously, they're just not ready for this type of technology, obviously, being able to generate things as well as it does. I think that's the biggest key here is, you know, some of these newer models are able to generate content at a much higher quality than past models, especially if you iterate on it. Like, obviously, if the person actually were to read these generated books and actually self-edit themselves and say, oh, wow, like, this is, doesn't make sense, or they go and run it through again, the areas that don't make sense, and to make them make sense, it makes it even harder to actually discern whether these are fake generated content or not. So I think that this is definitely going to be a problem as literature becomes more and more like a gig economy almost, where, you know, people can go and self-publish themselves. There needs to be more and more systems to guarantee more validity going forward. And I do like the service that you're talking about here is obviously following things like copyright, ensuring identity. However, that doesn't stop somebody from the very beginning of becoming a new author. And I think we definitely need to figure out that. I think that's the biggest thing that Amazon's going to have to combat for sure. And I think that's going to be a problem with a lot of things, including, you know, we're starting to see this even in the tech sector when it comes to people publishing new papers around things. Things are getting generated. And I think that's another big problem. So I think that lots of different sectors of the market are going to have this challenge to go. I mean, even in education, you probably have people submit papers before that, you know, could have been plagiarized. I mean, this is probably going to be an even bigger problem in the education industry, isn't it?
Actually, I was involved in two investigations where the computers for the research lab were seized. And we actually went through a forensic audit, and in one case, we found falsified Photoshop images of electrophoresis gels, you know, attempting to prove falsely, in this case, that these compounds that they had created were anti-cancer drugs, and potentially millions or tens of millions of dollars could be involved. Those professors, this is actually one of the few times when a full tenured professor not only can be fired, but blackballed from academia.
Wow.
And we had quite a long conversation with both the local police department and also the FBI before it was decided by the Board of Regents to pull the trigger on that. Because once you do that, there's no backing away. You know, that's the other side of the coin. You know, you pull that trigger and they can never teach again.
Now, how did, you don't have to give out all the details, but how did they actually, like, was it just really combing through the documents that they wrote to basically determine all of this and figure out, especially the Photoshop side of things? How do they actually investigate the images to make sure they were real? How do they figure this all out?
Actually, how did I figure it out? Because
how did
I was
you figure it out?
Schmuck going through terabytes of data. I actually used Encase, which is a piece of forensic software that's used by a large number of law enforcement agencies. And one of the first things you do is you do image searches, because those are usually the easiest to find. So in one case, we actually used it, and I found a lot of kiddie porn, and investigation instantly stopped there. It instantly got jumped up to the federal level. All my investigation tools and everything were turned over to the FBI, and that particular professor is now serving hard time.
Right.
In the second case, it was finding images. And electrophoresis gels are, you document those using image high resolution images. I then turned all those over with the timestamps off the files to subject matter experts, who then determined whether or not they were falsified. Also buried in the files are edit marks. You know, you working for Microsoft, you know all about edit marks for Word and Excel and so forth. Right. Applications leave lots and lots of fingerprints, as does Photoshop. So it wasn't that hard to find out that someone had altered an image using Photoshop. And not only that, it gave me the exact time and date of that edit. Wow. So once that was done, then we just tied it to the documents and make sure that they were the versions that were actually submitted, which, by the way, Microsoft Outlook leaves a very nice paper trail.
A lot of them do. Even printers do this, right?
You can basically track those little dots. Yeah. Right. So that was actually one of my big jobs when I was working for the federal government, is aiding law enforcement agencies that did not have computer forensic specialists to go and seize that, right down to, I'm sorry, you don't do a graceful shutdown of a computer. You actually yank the power cord. And then you go and physically remove the hard drives, and we go and do a forensic copy and take a hash of that drive. We keep the original in evidence, and we return, if it's allowed to be returned, we return a forensic copy to the person. So it's an extensive and not particularly nice process.
Right. And I think that's the major point here that I think we hopefully will get across to companies like Amazon, is the fact that this is not an easy process to do, especially the fact that you have to be a forensics expert to determine a lot of this. And so I'm hoping that the industry can figure this out as things move rapidly fast in different parts. So we'll see how it evolves over time. Thanks, Brian. Well, next up, we definitely have our guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. But before we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech. And that's, of course, Discourse, the online home for your community. For over a decade, Discourse has made it their mission to make the internet a better place for online communities by harnessing the power of discussion, real-time chat, and AI. Discourse makes it easy to have meaningful conversations and collaborate with your community anytime, anywhere. Would you like to create a community? Well, visit discourse.org/twit to get 1 month free on all self-serve plans. Trusted by some of the largest companies in the world, Discourse is open source and powers more than 20,000 online communities. Whether you're just starting out or want to take your community to the next level, there's a plan for you. A basic plan for a private invite-only community, a standard plan if you want unlimited members and a public presence, and a business plan for active customer support communities. Jonathan Belova, developer advocacy lead at Twitch, says Discourse is the most amazing thing we've ever used. We've never experienced software so reliable ever. One of the biggest advantages to creating your own community with Discourse is that you own your own data. You always have access to all of your conversation history, and Discourse will never sell your data to advertisers. Discourse gives you everything you need in one place. Make Discourse the online home for your community. Visit discourse.org/twit to get 1 month free on all self-serve plans. That's discourse.org/twit. And we thank Discourse for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot today. We have Ben Pippinger. He's CSO of Xylo. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you, Lou. So happy to be here. Excited to talk a little bit about SaaS management and what we're up to at Xylo.
Absolutely. Well, before we get into all that, our audience is a massive spectrum of experience, whether they're just starting out in the industry, entry level, all the way up to the CTOs, CEOs of the world. And some of them actually love to hear people's origin stories. Can you maybe take us through a journey through tech and what got you to Xylo?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm one of the co-founders here of the company, actually. So we started our business back in 2016. And sort of what leading up to that, I had a bunch of different roles. I found myself early in my career at a startup called ExactTarget. We were an email marketing company. And early days, I was in the individual contributor role of implementing our customers. We had large enterprise customers. Actually, Microsoft was one of our large customers. I had moved out to the Seattle area actually to implement our product at Microsoft back in like 2008. So it was a bit of time ago, but spent a few years out in Seattle and made my way sort of building teams out there for the company. And then I came back. Our headquarters is in Indianapolis, Indiana. Came back here, took on a product management role, worked in product management for a few years. We actually got acquired by Salesforce. So at that point in time, I was working as a product manager within the Salesforce product organization. And at that point in time, just realizing, man, this was back in 2015-ish. SaaS was really, had been a delivery model for about 10 years at that point, and writing was on the wall that everything is moving to SaaS and it's causing a lot of chaos for a lot of organizations. So as we started to realize that, we put together a thesis on how we can help companies of really all different types and sizes understand what's going on with software. And we started Xylo back in 2016. And so was leading the product and engineering organization there for a few years and then moved over to a strategy role a couple of years ago, where today I'm focused on our strategic technology partnerships, a lot of sort of third-party analysis. I work with a lot of our analysts, Gartner and others that cover our space, and pay attention to categories around us. So it's been a fun journey for sure.
Now we've talked a lot of companies here on Twit before, especially around the fact that they have tons of SaaS applications out there. They're utilizing sometimes hundreds of different applications, and they're not necessarily utilizing it to the full potential. They might have 1,000 seats and they're only utilizing 500 of them. So there's obviously lots of, in fact, we've talked to several ERP companies that are doing some kind of AI analytics on people's spend to determine whether they're spending too much on infrastructure or spending too much on services. What is one of the challenges that, especially maybe even a small to medium sized business face when it comes to this type of thing? Because obviously they don't necessarily know what they're utilizing even. There's lots of duplication, obviously. What can companies and organizations do today, even without great services like Xylo and that kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, so our data, we show that the average organization has about 291 SaaS applications. And then that's the average, right? Up in the enterprise, you get into we have customers that when we first start working with them, we find over 1,000, sometimes 2,000 different SaaS applications that people are buying and using across their organization. So the problem is definitely real. It's definitely there. You know, if I think about how small, mid-size companies can start to think about it, I mean, there's lots of different tactics you can take. You mentioned, you know, a lot of licensing going wasted. That's definitely rampant all over the place. Again, our data, we show about 44% of SaaS licenses are wasted. So that means they're either never provisioned or not given to the end user. So, you know, if without a system or a tool to help you understand the problem and how big it is for you, I mean, I would say starting with your biggest vendors, where you spend the most money, and then looking at those, you know, Salesforce is a great example of one that you can start with to really understand, you know, how many licenses do we actually have of those licenses, who's actually using them. You can get even more advanced to start to figure out, like, if they have a license, could I downgrade them to different license types? So there's a ton of cost savings opportunities just around just optimizing your large platforms outside of just, you know, the chaos that exists within SaaS today.
Yeah, I mean, it basically just uncovering the fact that it's a tough challenge, especially for people who manage, you know, licenses as it is. Because I've worked with lots of organizations where you might have, you know, an infrastructure team that's managing, you know, a certain set of things. You have an IT team is managing another set of things, and, you know, they're all managing different licenses for different groups, and so it becomes a very complicated scenario for organizations. You know, a lot of redundancy going on there. Do you think that one of the major things that we've just talked about AI in our last conversation, is this something that's kind of coming up from the ground where this type, like AI, can actually help with something like this?
Oh, for sure. So I'll throw another stat at you. I've got a bunch of stats. We do an annual report where we look at all the spend data and usage information. So, you know, if you rewind the clock back, you know, 15 years ago, IT, your listeners, were responsible for buying 100% of the software that was being bought in the enterprise. You know, they had data centers, they had servers they were supporting, they would deploy software to those servers, they would enable their teams on how to use it. And that's how the enterprise worked. Today, our numbers show that IT is only responsible for about 18% of the applications within a company. The rest is either being bought by the business. So, being bought by your CMO, your head of sales, whoever needs those tools, or being bought by employees, you know, employees out swiping credit cards, expensing that software through their expense management platform, oftentimes going around safeguards and things like that. So where AI starts to come into play here, there's a couple areas. One is helping organizations find it all. So it's almost a needle in the haystack type of approach. Our approach at Xylo, we take an approach of following the money. So we hook into ERP systems, expense systems, and we have a machine learning model that's sitting on top of all of that data to uncover what's being bought, who's buying it, how much are they spending on it. And then we bring that all centrally into a system of record so that you then have an inventory of all of your SaaS applications that are being bought and used across your company. So it really unlocks something that's not possible today through AI.
Yeah, I was just going to dig into that because I was curious about how you just said, hey, you know, users and people in the company can just go spend their credit card on a service and we know that most of the company won't even know they have it. And that's it's interesting. So you actually plug in to the money side. So where people are actually doing the spend. And, you know, so it's like, let's say I'm using SAP for my ERP and a lot of those transactions get funneled through there. And of course I have to, you know, get approvals and pay out the company credit card, that kind of thing. So you're essentially starting there and saying, okay, we understand that this is actually for a service. And so we go and inventory that, or this is for a product and we go inventory that. Now, does it work for both services like SaaS applications, but also hardware that goes along with it? So if I buy, like, I'd say a network appliance, but also comes with a service, does it kind of manage that as well?
Yeah, it's a great question. So our that machine learning model I mentioned, so it's processed through over $1 trillion in spend data over the past, you know, 7 or so years, and it's categorized about $33 billion in SaaS transactions. So it's seen a lot. It is trained on SaaS. You know, that's really, we see, you know, to your point earlier, the problem is massive. It's big. People don't really understand how big the problem is for their organization and how to get their arms around it. So we've squarely focused on SaaS and helping organizations get their arms around that up to this point.
Now, let me ask you a question. Obviously, you're working with very sensitive data. So some organizations, I talk to, they're always worried about these crawlers that crawl through their data and obviously report on things, especially financials. Is this something that, you know, you guys see? And obviously you have to have special, handling of this type of data when it comes to, especially in places like EU.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, early days of the company, when we set out to do what we're doing, we knew that like certain, controls and compliance is going to be really, really, required for us to be successful. So early on, we went out, we got our SOC 2 agreement to make sure that we had all of our, you know, proper, controls in place and covered. We've got, you know, security teams in place today that nearly every customer we work with, we go through an InfoSec review to really understand, you know, what data we can get access to, how are we going to treat our data, how long are you going to store that data, all those important components of standing up a customer relationship. So it is definitely a part of our process to get that, you know, that all ironed out, but it's typically something that we're able to work through, especially because there's so much value here. There's so much when people see the data, when we come to them and we show that we found 3 times what they thought they had from a spend perspective, around software, it's pretty eye opening and unlocks a lot of value for them as an organization.
I agree. Definitely eye-opening for sure. And you know what? Yeah. We'll definitely get into more of the eye-opening things in a moment, but we're going to pause for just a quick break. We've been talking with Ben Pippinger, CSO of Xylo, about SaaS spending and, of course, how AI can play a good role in there. Brian, welcome back. Some questions?
Yeah, we started talking a little bit about how your data has different people that need to look at it. Let's go start diving into things like GDPR and HIPAA and so forth. You alluded to the EU, and EU means GDPR. What kinds of widgets, what kinds of controls do you have so that you can assure the people that are writing the checks that if they get hit by an audit, that they're not going to go to jail?
Yeah, we wouldn't want that, obviously, Brian. Actually, as you were talking earlier, I was like, man, I don't have anything that's going to talk about how I put someone behind bars. So I don't know if my part's going to be as impactful as the stories that you were sharing. But we have full GDPR compliance. You know, all of our privacy policy, our EU privacy policy covers how we handle data and how we, you know, respect individuals' rights to request their data back or deletion of that data. That's all covered in our own policies from a company perspective. We also have native tools inside of our application. So I mentioned, you know, on average, a few hundred applications that we're discovering. We're also bringing forward for our customers visibility to know of those apps who has a SOC 2 in place, who has GDPR compliance, that they're stating that they're compliant with those things. So we're helping them get full visibility into everything and across their full SaaS inventory, which can be really challenging just with all the apps out there and trying to track it all and keep tabs on everything.
Well, let's go dive just a little deeper. Let's talk insurance. The reality is the insurance, operational insurance, is covering an awful lot of day-to-day IT. One of the things that I got hit with, because I sit on the board for a couple of companies, is how organized you are, how well you can audit your facilities has a direct relationship to how much you fork over to the insurance companies. Do you have those types of reports already set up, or is that a custom job?
Yeah, I mean, so sort of back to the discovery and the inventory side. So you think about it, right? So let's say we're working with a new company, we hook into their financial system. So we're then running our discovery against that and creating this inventory of SaaS applications. This is something they've never had before. And on day one, there's a whole bunch of value that's unlocked because all of a sudden they can see every app, what they're spending on it, all the data we bring forward, like the security information. But then also the important thing is that new apps are added all the time. So new apps are being purchased all the time. Employees are buying new stuff all the time. And we're surfacing all that in a centralized system of record. So I honestly haven't really ever hit the use case you're describing, Brian, around, you know, helping to control insurance costs and things like that. But just having that level of visibility and being able to reassure companies that are providing, you know, third parties that are providing you insurance, that you know what's going on and you have a system that you can rely on that's continually updated. So that's removing risk from your organization. I can definitely see how that could be a use case for the data that we have in our system.
Yeah, I just asked because I'm going to show my age here. This was actually a very standard thing that IBM put into their mainframes, especially on big CICS applications. So this is kind of in the category of, is SaaS growing up? You know, has SaaS become the next mainframe? I don't see too much difference anymore. So your website has this really cool banner on it. It says, the platform CIOs love, the services CFOs need. What I'd like you to do is let's expand on that a little bit. You know, why are you making that claim?
Yeah, I mean, so we'll start with the platform, right? So I mentioned inventory and sort of how we do that. That's really important for organizations to get that level of visibility. The two additional areas that we focus on within the platform, number one would be around licensing and license optimization and managing your SaaS licenses. So you think about what Lou brought up earlier with the waste involved with SaaS apps. We plug in directly to those applications through their APIs. We also pull data through things like your single sign-on provider, and you can actually upload data into the system as well to then get centralized visibility to know what your usage looks like. And then we drive workflows to reclaim and pull back unused or underused licenses. So that's the second component. The third component then is around the renewal process and the renewal workflows that procurement teams and others require to then renew all these applications. So you've got, you know, hundreds of apps inside of your portfolio of applications. All of those renew on a regular basis. We make sure you are aware of those renewals, that you don't miss a renewal, that you have the data you need to be have a proactive approach and talking with your vendors versus a reactive approach. So from a platform perspective, that's sort of the three buckets: inventory, licensing, and then renewals. We then couple that with a managed service offering that we provide. And probably the of the two different ones that we offer, the one that stands out the most is our SaaS Negotiator service. So with SaaS Negotiator service, again, back to those renewals and the net new purchases of software, hundreds of them, how do teams really, you know, small, mid-sized, and even the large enterprise scale to be able to support all of those negotiations? How do they understand price benchmarking? How do they know if they're getting a good price on an application? How do people on their team have expertise in all these different SaaS applications and other different levers you can pull during negotiations? So we provide a managed service that does that for our customers. So it's really an extension of their procurement teams to be able to negotiate on their behalf and drive real cost savings back to the business.
So just a quick follow-up to what Brian was asking, because I think I'm very interested in the fact that obviously he called out the concept that CIOs and CFOs need this for strategic purposes. What about the combination, like the collaboration between those two jobs, right? That's a very hard thing. Obviously, the CIOs, they need systems and services to be put in place, but the CFOs want to make sure that you're not spending too much money. So like how do they bridge the divide between those two kind of seats in an organization, basically?
Yeah, I mean, that's another good question, and honestly, even more important given sort of the macroeconomic climate that we're in right now. You know, we've seen CFOs having just a bigger seat at the table with really almost all purchasing going through them for final approvals. So I think, you know, anytime a CIO and a CFO are working together, you know, the CIO's job is to really help the CFO understand why a purchase is needed. Why you can't do it today with the tools you already have available to you, why something else is needed in order to accomplish whatever the goals you're trying to set out to accomplish. And then a CFO is really going to be thinking about, you know, is there ROI involved with this? Is there cost savings? What can I expect as a result of us putting this tool in place? And then probably just as important is how quickly, you know, when I think about how fast are those savings going to be achieved, how quickly is that going to affect our operating expenses, our OPEX, and our bottom line? Those are all really important things. So I think the relationship needs to be one that they're approaching together to make sure the CIO is bringing the CFO along the journey as they're out thinking about buying and renewing different pieces of software.
So one interesting factor that I'm actually curious about, because I talked to a lot of organizations that they use services that sometimes are based on the amount of compute or usage that you have on it. Mm-hmm. And so does Xylo be able to perform that type of thing? Because again, just analyzing financials, this is, oh, okay, you got this service. Let's just call it storage service. And you're utilizing it to store data, but you're not utilizing it at a very high capacity, which means maybe you should be having be purchasing another tier. So you're not using it at a particular capacity. Is that something that Xylo can do? Because actually analyze that type of thing and say, oh no, we can probably bring you down to a lower tier, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's another good question. I think, you know, when I think about cloud in general, you know, I sort of bucket it into three areas. You have your public cloud, you have your hyperscalers. That's your infrastructure as a service, your platform as a service. And then you have your SaaS, right? So those are sort of the three different areas. For the sort of the cloud area, the infrastructure and platform as a service, a lot of times people are going to look to like the FinOps function within an organization. They're going to look to tools that are pretty well established out in the market today, like a Cloudability from Apptio, now IBM, or one of the like. We couple really nicely with those because you have those tools. We will bring forward some consumption data. We call it consumption data when you're not licensing data. It's when you buy a bucket of things that you're then burning through. Okay. We'll bring forward some consumption data for some SaaS applications. And then we'll also bring forward all that licensing information for your user license-based app. So really sort of thinking about those collectively together, a lot of the same principles apply and ways that you can really drive savings and optimization opportunities through platforms like that.
Now, I want to jump in. How about the hybrid world? You know, I used to work at a university and academics aren't very good at moving things into the cloud. And the best I could get them to do is hybrid. But a lot of the tools that I had access to wouldn't play nicely in the hybrid world. How about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, so if you look at third-party analysis, right? I look at Gartner a lot. I mentioned we maintain relationships with them. They're focusing, or they've come out and said by 2024, SaaS spend globally will be about $232 billion and growing 20% year over year. And so it's continuing to grow. They've also said that software spend by 2026 will be $1 trillion globally. So there's just a lot of money going towards software. And the tipping point really has been reached from sort of on-premise, to SaaS. And so we've taken the strategic decision to focus on SaaS. We think there's a lot of problems there and a lot of opportunity there from a cost savings and risk reduction perspective. That's squarely where we focused up to this point. But again, you know, into the future, I think people will always have hybrid. Like that's going to be it's not like everything's going to always be in the cloud. There's going to be hybrid approaches and things. So, I think it's opportunity for us into the future.
Well, let's go and ask the loaded question then. If I'm looking at possibly adopting Xylo, what kinds of homework should I be doing? How do I prep before I start calling your sales team?
That's a great question. I think first and foremost, like trying to figure out what you have. Like, you know, lots of times within organizations, there's somebody, maybe it's your software asset management team. If you're not quite big enough for a SAM team, maybe it's your procurement team. If you're not quite big enough for a procurement team, maybe it's, you know, an IT director that's got a spreadsheet. They've got a list somewhere of here's all the stuff that I know about. Here's our renewal dates. Here's the cost centers associated with it. Here's, you know, who's the app owners for all of these things. So really starting there to start to figure out, okay, is this, do we have a grasp at least on what we think is happening? Have we had scenarios where we missed renewals or we were auto renewed something that maybe we didn't need, or we feel like, man, we're spending way too much on software. There's got to be opportunity here. Those are all, like, you know, you can go out and ask people in the business those questions to figure out, hey, maybe this is an opportunity for us. And something that we should really, you know, double down into and try to figure out if there's something we can do. But I mean, I can tell you, like, you know, Brian, think about your own personal life. You know, if you've got, if you've got a spouse or you have children yourself, you're out buying software. You're out buying subscriptions for things. You know, you've got your Spotify subscription and your Hulu subscription and your YouTube TV subscription, all of these things. And if your family also has them, they all have them as well, right? You're probably spending way too much. You're probably buying the same thing multiple times. Lou mentioned duplication, even just in your own personal life. Now take that to a whole new level of an enterprise where you've got hundreds or thousands of people all doing the same thing. The problem exists. Like, it's there. It's there really in almost every organization that we work with. But I think some of those early steps can help you at least get a frame of mind or a frame of reference for how big the opportunity is for your organization.
Well, you know, speaking of opportunities, let's go do the blatant plug. Where can people go to get information about Xylo? Where can they go to maybe scratch the surface and see if it's a good fit for their organization?
Yeah. So I saw you had our website up scrolling through. That's a great place to start for sure. There's a ton of information out there. There's an entire resources page that includes any white papers we've put out. It includes all of our blog posts. We've got a great podcast. There's actually two different versions of it. One is all with our customers. So it's our customers on there describing what we call their ocean moments when they really discover what's going on with SaaS and how big the problem is for them. There's another one called SaaS Me Anything that's I'm the host of that is really the fundamentals. What are the key questions that people are trying to solve for SaaS? So a lot of good information, a lot of good content out there. We also have a SaaS management index, which is a lot of those points that I was making earlier on our data. That's an annual report that we put out that's available on our website as well. So lots of really good reference points for you to go and start learning a little bit about this category, about the problems we solve. And then when you're ready to talk to us, it's just as simple as clicking the contact button on our website to get in touch with one of our representatives. So I would love to talk to you all. I think there's probably lots of problems out there we can help you solve.
Thank you. Thanks so much for being here, Ben. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you guys. Really, it's been fun to be here. So it's great to meet you as well. Lou, my son's name is Lewis. So it's always good to meet another Lou.
I agree. My son's Lewis and my dad's Lewis. So we have lots of Lewis's, right? Awesome. great to meet you. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another Out of the Best Dang Enterprise podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatchers to Twi. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-host, Mr. Brian Chi. G-Bird, it's always amazing having you on. I'm so glad you're feeling better. Anything you want to plug or pitch before we sign out?
I just want to plug that Maui is definitely needing your help. And if you are so inclined to donate to help in the recovery process, please, please avoid those GoFundMe scams. Go to a real honest-to-God charity that has boots on the ground. We posted the link. Maui Now is the daily newspaper that I posted. They have all kinds of people that are in boots on the ground. And one of the questions that folks in the chat room had was, are we going to start seeing more of the telecom carriers helping out? And the answer is, I believe so. I have one of my ex-students is actually one of the head networking people for the city and county of Honolulu. They've already transferred their Starlink gear to the county of Maui to help with that. They're actually doing a feed to the Hawaii Red Cross. And from what we are told, quite a few cows, mobile cell systems, are sitting on the pier in Honolulu getting ready to be shipped to Maui. So hopefully there'll be telecommunications in Maui very soon. So look forward to that. Please consider donating if you are prone to that. If you want to hear me rant and rave about, gee, I'm glad the giant banyan tree in Lahaina might survive. Best place is actually Twitter. I'm still there. I'm ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab on Twitter. You're also welcome to throw email. I'm Chebert, spelled C-H-E-E-B-E-R-T at twit.tv, or you can send email to twit at twit.tv, which hits all the Twit hosts. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your suggestions for shows, and everybody, please be safe.
Thank you, Chebert. Well, with folks, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to get your enterprise goodness. We want to make it easy for you to watch and listen to catch up on your enterprise and IT news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twit. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes that we have. Of course, we're over 500 episodes now. Of course, next to those show notes, co-host information, guest information, and those videos there, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. So you'll find all of your, the version of your choice, whether it's audio version or video version. Definitely subscribe to the podcast. It's the best way to actually, you know, support us, of course, and keep the podcast going, of course. But of course, another thing you can also do is subscribe to Club Twit as well. That's right. It's a members only ad free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus fee that you can't get anywhere else. And it's only $7 a month. And it's really a lot of great things that come with Club Twit. Of course, one of those things is exclusive access to the members only Discord server. That's right. You can chat with hosts, producers. There's lots of discussion channels in there. Plus, they also have a lot of special events. Cool ones coming up, of course. Lots of fun stuff going on there. So definitely join Club Twit. It's twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, also know that Club Twit offers corporate group plans as well. A really great way to give your entire team access to our ad-free podcast. That plan starts at 5 members at a discount rate of just $6 each per month. And you can add as many seats as you like after that. And this is really great way for your IT team, your developers, your tech teams to stay up to date with all of our podcasts. And just like that regular membership, they can join the Twit Discord server as well and get that Twit Plus bonus feed. So definitely have them join at twit.tv/Club Twit. And of course, there's also family plans. That's right. $12 a month. You get 2 seats with that, and you can add more seats for just $6 each. And you get all the same advantages as the single plan as well. So lots of options there. So definitely check out Club Twit, twit.tv/Club Twit. After you subscribe, I want you to impress your family members, your coworkers, your friends with the gift of Twit, because we have a lot of fun on this show. We talk about a lot of fun and interesting tech topics, and I guarantee they will find it fun and interesting as well. So definitely have them join and subscribe as well. And if you already subscribed, we are available. We are doing this show live right now, 1:30 p.m. Pacific time on Fridays. We do it live. You can check it out at, just go to live.twit.tv in your browser, and there you'll see all the streams there. So some new ones are actually showing up as well. You can check out whatever stream you like, YouTube, Twitch, whatever. And of course, you can come see all the behind the scenes, all the banter before and after the show. Come see how the pizza's made, of course. And you can come and join the live chat as well. That's right. We also have a live chat room at irc.twit.tv. Just go there right now. It'll jump you right into the Twit Live channel. We have some amazing people in there, of course, each and every week. There you go. Tech Dino, Loquacious, we have Chickenhead, we have Beatmaster, a lot of great people in there each and every week, Eric Duckman, and they have a lot of fun in there. Of course, we talk about a lot of fun stuff. We have set up some questions for the guests. We have some show titles, lots of fun stuff. So thank you guys for always being there. Definitely check the show live. Now, I want you to reach out to me as well, because I've been having some really good conversations about AI recently, of course, about enterprise, of course, as well as about PaaS and SaaS offerings as well. So definitely hit me up at twitter.com/LilMem. You can direct message me there. You can just post publicly, whatever you want to do. Of course, you can always message me on LinkedIn as well. LinkedIn, Louis Maresca, I'm on there. I have a lot of great conversations with people starting out, people in CSOs or CISO positions each and every week. In fact, it takes me an entire Sunday evening to get to through all of them, and I really do enjoy it every week. So definitely hit me up there. Of course, I'm also on Mastodon, LouMM at twit.social. Direct message me there. And of course, I'm LouMPM on the amazing Threads app as well. So definitely check me out there. If you want to know what I do during my normal work week, definitely check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There it is. So really gives you a lot of great options to customize your office experience to make it more productive for you, whether it's coding or just creating bots, or maybe even just adding automation. Definitely check that out. And of course, if you have Microsoft 365 right now, open Excel, and there's a new Automate tab in there. Definitely check that out, because that allows you to record different things within Excel and automate them. You can send them over to Power Automate, integrate with them with other services. You can run them on schedules, whatever you want to do. A lot of great ways to really customize your workflows and your orchestrations, and I guarantee you'll find it more productive. So definitely check that out. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all their support over the years. And of course, thank you to all the staff and engineers at Twit, because we couldn't do the show without them. And of course, I want to thank Mr. Brian Chi one more time, because he's not only our co-host here, but he's also our tireless producer. And even when he was sick, so he was done, does all the bookings and the plannings for the show. So we really couldn't do the show without him. So thank you, Cheever, for your support. Of course, before we sign out, I want to thank the editor for today, because if they're going to get rid of all of my mistakes. So I appreciate that. Of course, thank you to our TD today, technical director, Mr. Ant Pruitt. Ant, it's always great to hear you, my friend. Now, I want to hear about some of these special events that are coming up on Club Twit.
Well, Mr. Liu, yes, in Club Twit, we do have some special events coming up. We have a photo walk that'll be happening here in Petaluma here. I believe it's the 24th, 26th. It's the last Saturday in August. Looking forward to that. We just recently did a photo critique. And then even down the road, we're going to have a AMA with this one dude I know named Lou Maresca. He seems to be all right. So, yeah, join Club Twit, y'all. It's $7 a month. And I believe that's probably less expensive than one of those fancy coffees you drink.
That's right. Thank you, Ant. Always really enjoy the extra events and, of course, your support as well. Thanks again. Well, until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
Hey, we should talk Linux. It's the operating system that runs the internet, a bunch of game consoles, cell phones, and maybe even the machine on your desk. But you already knew all that. What you may not know is that Twit now has a show dedicated to it, the Untitled Linux Show. Whether you're a Linux pro, a burgeoning sysadmin, or just curious what the big deal is, you should join us on the Club Twit Discord every Saturday afternoon for news, analysis, and tips to sharpen your Linux skills. And then make sure you subscribe to the Club Twit exclusive Untitled Linux Show. Wait, you're not a Club Twit member yet? Well, go to twit.tv/clubtwit and sign up. Hope to see you there.